Welcome to another edition of Geopolitics and Empire. A reminder again to support the broadcast. You can do that by becoming a paid subscriber on the Substack, $5 a month. Buy me some coffee or send reinforcements via DonorBox. Today, we welcome Alex Newman, who's an award-winning international journalist, educator, author, speaker, investor, and consultant who seeks to glorify God in everything he does. You'll find him at thenewamerican.com, where he's a senior editor, as well as libertysentinel.substack.com or libertysentinel.org, among other places. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
So we chatted a while back on my TNT program. And so first time, I think, having you on Geopolitics and Empire. And, you know, let's get right to it, right out the gate, guns blazing. You know, at this juncture, historically, geopolitically, prophetically, what are, you know, for you, the key issues and trends to be observing as we enter what seems to be the quickening or the crucible, as I like to say?
Well, that's a big question, and there are so many different roads we could go down there. But when it comes to, I think, the biggest issue, I believe it involves what's happening to our children in the public school system. We're watching right now a centralization of education unlike anything the world has ever seen, maybe clear back to the Tower of Babel. We've got the United Nations now openly calling for centralized global education standards. They're putting out, actually a few years ago, they put out international technical guidance on sexuality education. They want all the kids in the whole world to learn the same sex stuff. We've got really an effort to indoctrinate every child on this planet into submission to an all-powerful one-world dictatorship, if we're just very blunt about it. And so on the surface, you see the geopolitical tensions. You know, we see what's going on with Russia, Ukraine, NATO, and the West versus, you know, Kremlin and the Eurasian Economic Union. We see that. We see China. We see what's going on in the Middle East. But under the surface of it all, behind the scenes, not really getting much attention, is this effort to bring all the children of the world into this one world globalist system. And what's so remarkable about this to me is that it's not even hidden anymore. If you read Agenda 2030, the 2030 Agenda Sustainable Development Goals, goal number 4 deals entirely with this issue. It says all learners everywhere need to learn world citizenship. They need to learn sustainable development. And actually, the text of the agreement indicates that they don't just need to be brainwashed enough that they'll go along with it, they'll accept it. The word they use is they're going to promote sustainable development. They're going to promote the UN's understanding of human rights, which is radically different than the traditional American understanding of human rights, right? In the American vision, God gives us rights, government exists to protect those rights. In the UN vision, the UN and governments give us rights, in quotes, and they can take them away at any time. So I do believe that what's happening just behind the scenes with education is probably the most significant issue. Of course, that's not to downplay the significance of all the others, but I think give it a generation, maybe two, and you'll see this issue is going to become far more important than anything else we're talking about. And again, that's not to downplay the issues we're facing. The open border is huge. I mean, the reverberations from that are going to echo down through the ages. But the most significant thing is that for the first time in human history, we're seeing a concerted effort to indoctrinate every child on earth with the same propaganda from the pit of hell.
And that overlaps with that main project of world government, where, you know, they're pushing us towards a global economic system, a global political system. And so they have to have what you outlined, this global education system. And I've mentioned before, I've taught at the top high school in Kazakhstan, where they had obligatory model United Nations, SDGs, as you mentioned, those were being infused into subject matters across the board. I also taught at the top high school and university in Mexico. Same thing there. So it seems like they start with the top tier schools in foreign countries, and then they work their way down towards the public schools. Do you see this happening globally? Do you see them having a difficult time to implement some of this stuff in you know, some of the maybe more remote conservative countries around the world?
It's so interesting that you say that, because I grew up around the world. I went to some of the most elite educational institutions on the planet in Mexico, in Brazil, in Switzerland. And we were getting a massive dose of globalist propaganda when I was growing up. This was in the 1990s and in the 2000s. We had all the Model United Nations. Everything was about, you know, the UN was really portrayed as like the savior of mankind. It's going to get rid of the scourge of war and poverty and hunger. And this was just drilled into your head from the time you're tiny. And the agenda was always, to me, very transparent. They're training up future managers for this diabolical global system. So that's where this is headed. Yes, they are having some resistance from. I was on the Arabian Peninsula just a few months ago and had the opportunity to meet with some of the senior officials at one of the Sunni Arab regime's education ministry. And they were bragging to me about how they were aligning all of their programs and curricula with the United Nations. But they said, we do have some. They tried to be very delicate about it. I assume they didn't want to get in trouble, but it's something about, you know, we have some moral and issues with, you know, modesty and things, so we can't import all of the sex education stuff yet, I guess was the attitude. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to take a lot longer on the Arabian Peninsula, for example, to be able to teach kindergarten children that they may have been born in the wrong body or that, you know, homosexuality is great and wonderful. They're not going to do that in Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Bahrain or the United Arab Emirates within the next decade or so, I'm quite sure. But the science is all being aligned. The history is all being aligned. What we're seeing now is truly global in scope. And they're gaining as much ground as they can everywhere that they can. So there's other obstacles in other parts of the world. You know, one of the things that they run into is they don't have the infrastructure, technologically speaking, to do a lot of this in very, very remote areas of Chad and Niger and, Burkina Faso or the Ivory Coast. You know, they don't have internet in all the rural villages, so they can't quite start with all the AI and education and all that. But we're watching now this very, very clear push to bring the Agenda 2030, they just say this over and over again in the text of the agreement, no one will be left behind. That's repeated at least a dozen times in the text of the agreement. And they're dead serious about that. There's not one Indian in the Amazon rainforest. There's not one pygmy in Central Africa that they don't intend to bring into this global system. And so right now we're watching that architecture be built. It will take longer in some places than others, but their plan is to make sure that not one single child slips through the cracks, and they make it crystal clear in their documents.
And I'm going to bring up a question I was going to ask later, but it kind of links to what you're talking about. And I've seen you mention this in your speeches. People can go on your feed and you're giving talks all the time, doing interviews, podcasts, and that would be, you know, the one world religion. Theosophy, I think, is the key word here. And, you know, I've attended a Lutz's Trust meeting in 2009 in Geneva. They've got their offices in New York, London, and Geneva. And, you know, they're a UN NGO, and they basically they believe in, you know, Blavatsky Bailey theosophy, and they believe, in their own words, they say Lucifer is the Christ, the Messiah, and they're preparing for his return. And that they say that UN conferences and World Economic Forum and such conferences are preparations, are basically conferences to prepare for the coming of this Lucifer Christ that they talk about. And, you know, there's this talk of Age of Aquarius. And I think this is the philosophy of the elites. But I'm also seeing now in alternative media, I've been going to different anti-globalist alt-media conferences, and they're full-on Gnostic, theosophy. They talk about Christ consciousness. Even some of the popular figures, the other day, Candace Owens, is it, just started talking about Christ consciousness. So there's a lot of strange now stuff coming up from below. And I think this plays into this sort of utopian one world sort of movement. Any thoughts on this?
It is so interesting you say that. I'm already blown away by this conversation, because there are very few people in the world that you can have conversations like this with. So yes, theosophy is a huge influence that runs right through all of this, right? Just to give a real clear example of this for the folks out there, and I talk about this in my latest book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. I've got a whole chapter on this. The guy who wrote the World Core Curriculum, his name is, he passed away, Robert Mueller. the UN calls him the father of global education. And that's no exaggeration. He is quite literally the father of global education. He's the primary author of the World Core Curriculum. It's on the UNESCO website. You know, he said very openly that every child in the world and every school in the world needs to get involved with this World Core Curriculum. The foreword to the teacher's manual actually says in very plain English that his philosophy of education, all these, this World Core Curriculum, is based on the teachings of Alice Bailey, who was the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company, one of the leading theosophists of her day, and the Tibetan teacher Jeval Kuhl. And what people don't realize is that Alice Bailey was communicating with spiritual entities. She called them ascended masters. And there are still people today, many of them at the highest levels of education, even here in the United States, who claim to be communicating with these same entities. And when Robert Mueller tells you that the World Core Curriculum is based on the teachings of Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company, we need to take that seriously. And so Alice Bailey wrote a book. I actually have it probably buried here within reaching distance, but she wrote a book called Education in the New Age. I've got a copy. I was going to pull it up and show it to you, but it's buried under all this stuff. But in there, she says a few different things, but one of them is that the education is going to prepare the way for this new age. And you're absolutely right, by the way, before we get into that book, they regard Lucifer as the good guy. See, so they look at Christians and they think, oh, you idiots, right? You guys worship. They see the God who's described in the Bible as Jehovah, as this oppressive, dictatorial, autocratic tyrant who was keeping Adam and Eve imprisoned in the garden. You know, without knowledge and wisdom and all the rest. And then Lucifer was the good guy who came to liberate us from this oppression. So Lucifer brought the light, right? The light bringer, is what Lucifer actually means. And so Lucifer brought this light by encouraging Adam and Eve to eat of this fruit that God had commanded them not to eat. And that is how they obtained enlightenment. That's how they came to know good and evil and so on. So they regard Lucifer as the hero. And as you explained, they think Lucifer is the savior of humanity. He's going to come and it's going to be wonderful. He is the Messiah, right? So to normal people, this sounds crazy. But unfortunately, at the highest levels of the elites, there are a lot of people who actually believe this. And it's very obvious once you start digging that the person who designed the meditation room at the UN headquarters was none other than Alice Bailey. So she claimed to be communicating with these ascended masters, and she channeled them and wrote a whole bunch of books with their help. And this Education in the New Age just lays it all out really clearly. Education is the key to bringing this global system about. She says world federation, in other words, world government, and a world brain are going to be the goal of the enlightened. That's what this global education system is going to bring about. And she talks about quite openly how we're going to be fusing Marxism and neo-scholasticism using the chosen methods of John Dewey, who's the founding father of the American education system. And so you come full circle to this. Now, some of Alice Bailey's other, and she's, of course, not the only theosophist. She was a disciple of Helena Blavatsky, the Russian mystic. She expanded a lot on this concept of Lucifer as the good guy in her books, Isis Unveiled and others. This really is, this theosophic religion is very, very widespread among the elites. It's especially widespread among the educational elites. Actually, the lady that George H.W. Bush administration hired to start developing national standards in the United States, long before even the world curriculum came about, was named Dr. Shirley McCoon, and she also, surprise, was communicating with these ascended masters. She co-wrote a book with a friend of hers called The Light Shall Set You Free, and it's about this new age that's coming, and all of them have this idea in common that the biggest obstacle to bringing about this new age, this evolution of consciousness, this age of Aquarius, is Bible-believing Christians. Alice Bailey called it the great heresy of separateness. In other words, those Christians, you know, God told them to be separate, to be holy, to be apart, to come out of Babylon. And, you know, that's not compatible. Everybody needs to be a part of this. So, this is a really critical issue. It's something that doesn't get talked about nearly enough, in my opinion. And I don't believe you can truly understand what's happening at the world level without understanding the influence of theosophy and people like Alice Bailey and her minions.
Any thought, have you noticed again, you know, Dr. Mercola, I've been a huge fan of his since forever, but it just came out that he is involved. He's under the spell of some guru and taking orders from this guy who's basically channeling spirits, I would say channeling demons. And so, you know, his ex-girlfriend, Erin, I forget her last name, shared this news story now where Mercola fired even his sister. And, you know, I still look to respect him from a health perspective, but now I have to take everything he's talking about with an extra grain of salt. But, you know, any thought on independent media sort of, you know, pushing, because I've seen them talking about oneness and Christ consciousness and these Gnostic ideas.
Yeah, I think this is actually a really important issue. And this is also something that doesn't get talked about nearly enough. I got a really weird phone call. This is the first time I'm going to mention it publicly, but I got a really weird phone call from an individual who claimed to be associated with this council, I believe he called it, a universal council. And in this conversation, I was told about these supposedly non-human entities that inhabit this planet. And what it is starting to look like to me is they've realized their old evildoers are so discredited, they won't be able to complete this project with, you know, the Rockefellers and the Soros and the old school evildoers that we all now know about. And so now they're bringing in new evildoers who are supposedly going to save us from the old evildoers, but who are also on board with all this Luciferian stuff. And to your point, I have noticed that exact same thing, and it's very troubling to me when you see alleged conservatives, alleged alternative media parroting the very same exact, even with the same terminology that Alice Bailey and these others have talked about. And I've seen this even kind of like in the heart of the freedom movement, the truth movement, the liberty movement. Very disturbing to me. And I've talked to several other Christians who are involved and who have noticed the same thing. There's a really great lady who's been exposing this for longer than anybody that I know of. Her name is Kelly Nelson, a wonderful, wonderful lady. She writes a lot for News with Views, and she's exposed for decades now this kind of occult strand that you find sometimes even within the conservative movement. And this is becoming much more prominent. Documentaries featuring people that I know and love, conclude with exactly this kind of language. So I think we really need to be discerning. And, it's possible that people got deceived and wrapped up in bad things. I hope that they will publicly apologize for that. But we really, really do need to be discerning. And as the Bible says, right, don't put your trust in man. Don't follow a human being. Read your Bible and make sure it lines up with the Bible. And beware, right? Your trust should not be in princes and it should not be in man. And to the broader point, even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, right? The devil's not going to come to you with the little devil horns and the tail and say, hey, I'm going to take your soul to hell. He's going to come to you and say, I've got truth. I've got special wisdom and special knowledge. So we do need to be very, very aware of this. And it's so interesting that you say that. I'm just blown away. But yes, I've noticed that. And everybody needs to be on the lookout, in my opinion.
I mean, for me, this has become more and more important. And I think it's we need to be discerning and not be fooled by any of this. And as you said, I was on earlier this week, I was a guest on Johnny Vedmore's TNT show, and he was asking me, and I said, you know, in general, we shouldn't have gurus. That's like idolatry. Right. That's even a biblical principle. So people shouldn't be looking to me or an Alex Newman or an Alex Jones or an Elon Musk. It's just like, we're all, you know, at the end of the game, the Italian proverb, at the end of the game, the king and the pawn both go in the same box, right? And, world government, again, that's one of the things I think about a lot, because I think a lot of the things that are going on, the end goal is that. And just recently, things have sort of crystallized in my mind as I've been reading articles, you know, Democracy Without Borders talks about that how they can use the climate change pretext, the climate change thing as a pretext to build the infrastructure for world government. They openly said that a few weeks ago. Then you've got on the heels of that Oppenheimer movie, same thing, articles coming out from Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which is a total globalist institution, saying the threat of nuclear war can be used, as a pretext to build the infrastructure for world government. So you got nuclear war, climate change, and then the health, right? You've talked about this as well, the WHO pandemic treaty, the international health regulations, that they can use this three-pronged attack, health as well, to build the global structure. And, you know, you mentioned already Agenda 2030. And we've got the smart city stuff. I live in a smart city. Guadalajara is a resilient city financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, which is a smart city. I'm reading Vancouver now is building a smart city in the name of, like, it's an indigenous project. They're camouflaging it all. I mentioned this British actor who's from Africa. He says he's going to go back home and build. He literally it said a smart city out of his old home. And so your thoughts on all this climate stuff and where you think we're going, you know, the WHO pandemic treaty and whatnot.
Right now, I think the world is facing a whole bunch of crises. Some of them may be organic, the vast majority of them concocted, created, manufactured, or at least drastically overblown. And this should not be a surprise, right? The globalists have told us for so long that crises and war are the most effective catalyst for advancing their cause. If you don't believe me, the U.S. government had a document on this. They commissioned a report back in the early 1960s. The State Department and Institute for Defense Analyses commissioned a report. It was called "A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations," written by Lincoln Bloomfield. People can still read this today. And in it, Lincoln Bloomfield says, I mean, his task is basically to figure out how we get from the old world of nation states to the new world of one world governance. And he says the fastest way is to use war, the threat of war or crisis, to change people's attitudes sufficient, he says, for a revolution in world political affairs. So this is not a mystery. If you go back to the 1800s, the great lawmaker and philosopher Frederick Bastiat identified this among the totalitarians. They always concoct the poison and the antidote in the same laboratory, is how he put it, right? So they create a problem and then they pose as saviors to the problem that they're creating. So that's what we're watching right now. I do believe climate is one of the most important strands on this because, first of all, the alleged boogeyman here is literally the human being. It's the gas that you exhale. So if the gas that you exhale is a dangerous toxic pollution and it's a global problem, so only a global government can save you, it's the perfect pretext to micromanage every single human activity, every single human being. Obviously, it's for the good of the planet. And if you disagree, well, you're some sort of criminal and you ought to be destroyed. Similar with health, right? Pandemics, so they say the viruses and the infections don't respect borders, et cetera. So we've got to have a one world system to deal with that. Then you have, at the same time, these economic crises that they're building up, the geopolitical crises that they're building up. And so the World Economic Forum early last year warned of what they called the polycrisis. And it was a very interesting term. It was actually a term that I had started using about 8 months before the World Economic Forum started using it. And I first heard it from my friend Patrick Wood, the author of Technocracy, the founder of Citizens for Free Speech, a great organization to defend free speech. So I heard it from him, and I thought, man, that's a perfect word to describe what's going on here. And that's what we're headed toward, right? They're trying to throw crisis after crisis after crisis at us, all eventually merging and culminating in this one giant polycrisis of doom, where they can then come in and say, look, we're going to save you from this poly crisis. We're going to make sure you can feed your children. We're going to make sure that, you know, you can get back to normal life. You can go to the grocery store. You can work. You can have money, whatever it is. And that's where they'll bring in the fake solution. So the fake solution to climate change, carbon taxes, total regulation of everything, rationing of all of the most essential things like energy, food, water, et cetera. The health pandemic, well, of course, if it's a health issue, well, everything is fair game. What are you eating? Maybe what you're eating is not making you healthy. We got to feed GMO foods. So you've got that. And then, of course, there's the religious angle as well, where they are now trying to totally reframe ethics and morality. And I've seen this so clearly at the last couple of UN climate conferences that I went to. The most recent one was in the United Arab Emirates. And very, very blatant. They actually put the faith pavilion at the heart, in their words, at the heart of the conference, because they said religion and faith need to be at the heart of these solutions. So the Pope was actually supposed to come and read the initial kind of welcome statement. He got sick and couldn't make it, so he dispatched Cardinal, what was his name, Pieter Edelin or whatever, the Vatican Secretary of State, and he read the Pope's speech for him and just very blatantly said, you know, we have to understand that our environmental sins are an offense against God, right? And the year before that, I actually walked to the top of Mount Sinai right after all these world religious leaders did, where they said they unveiled the new Ten Commandments. They did a climate repentance ceremony. And I interviewed four of the organizers of this thing later. They said, not only do we have the new Ten Commandments, we're also working, they said, on the third covenant. So God gave us the old Ten Commandments. They give us the new one. God gave us the old covenant, the new covenant. Well, they're giving us the third covenant. And he said, we're going to build the kingdom of heaven here on earth with this third covenant. So you see all of these things that seem unrelated, progressing, marching in lockstep together, the business community through the World Economic Forum, the governments of the world through the United Nations, the religions of the world, through a UN-funded outfit called Religions for Peace, which, by the way, in 2019 signed up to the idea that UN 2030 agenda needs to be the model for human development around the world. The head of the Religions for Peace, I actually have her on video, saying that this is the UN of religions, and all religions are part of this. So all the big businesses, all the governments, all the big religions marching in lockstep toward one world government, one world economy, one world spirituality. And presto, all that's left is, you know, us little people saying, no, stop, this is crazy. So, yes, I expect we're going to see a lot more crises in the year ahead and maybe in the few years ahead. And that will be, in their view, at least, the pretext to bring in this totalitarian one world system.
And you just reminded me something I've been looking at recently. You know, we already discussed the sustainable development goals. They have the inner development goals now, the IDGs, where they talk about it's religion, spiritual. So they're trying to onboard us spiritually, convince us to accept the, you know, this whole global political economic system. They're working from so many angles, and just I'm reading this book. I've been reading it for the longest time, but from the 1970s, Building the City of Man, and it's World Civilization. It's just what you just said. The guy is saying we need to depopulate, implement scientific dictatorship, and that we could use multiple crises to bring in world government, where finally people, you know, maybe use a tactical nuke or something like that, a limited nuclear exchange, to get people to give up their national sovereignty. So it's like there's countless books without end outlining all of these plans. And I'm just curious your thoughts on the recent Russian, the terror attack in Russia. I was looking at New American. William Jasper was commenting on this. And, you know, I keep it also in the back of my mind. I believe the 99 Moscow apartment bombings were a Russian false flag. I believe 9/11 was an American false flag. And so it's just like everyone does this sort of thing. It seems to look like it's the West doing it, and seemingly to sort of escalate to try to start a greater conflict. Do you have any opinion on what happened with that terror attack? And then BRICS and multipolarity as well. I think that's just the other side of the same coin.
Yep. I think that it is the other same side of the same coin. And I think you can't really understand geopolitics unless you understand the strategy that these people have so frequently talked about in public. The dialectical Hegelian strategy, where you have two different sides allegedly in conflict with each other. And then out of that conflict, you get the end objective. And I think that's what we're seeing here with this effort at creating a multipolar world order. You know, you look at Putin and the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, China, South Africa. You know, a lot of these places are near and dear to my heart. I've lived in many of those countries. I've been to all those countries except China, because I'm sure they'd throw me in a gulag. I've spent a lot of time in all of those places. And, you know, I love very dearly the Brazilian people, the South African people. I've lived in both of those countries. So it breaks my heart to see this. But their leaders are very, very much in league with the Western globalists. And that's something that escapes so many geopolitical analysts. They see this as a legitimate conflict between two rival blocks, maybe with rival ideologies. You know, they hear Putin talking about the value of family, and then they hear degenerate Western leaders talking about castrating children. And they think, oh, clear difference. Obviously, there's a real conflict here. But no, you dig just beneath the surface, and you see Vladimir Putin hanging out with Henry Kissinger. You see Putin building a Eurasian Economic Union, which fits perfectly with the model outlined by Henry Kissinger in his book World Order, of creating, he said, the contemporary quest for world order involves creating regional orders and then relating these regional orders to one another into ultimately a one world order. So that's what we're watching, I think, with the BRICS. You know, I don't know enough yet about what happened in Russia to have a sensible opinion, but I will say it would not be surprising at all if this was a false flag carried out by the Russians. Not at all, right? I absolutely believe the apartment bombing that you mentioned was a KGB operation. It provided the pretext to kill a bunch of people, to imprison a bunch of people. That's what governments do. They use false flag attacks. Could it have been NATO or Ukraine or ISIS? I suppose, but when you look at ISIS, that was a product of Western intelligence. We've got the smoking gun documents proving it. So no matter what, we're being lied to, we're being manipulated. And oftentimes, the biggest clues come in the reaction, right? We'll see what comes out of this, whether it leads to some sort of strike on the Western world. I think we'll be able to discern a lot more about what likely happened once we see fully the response from the Kremlin, from Putin. But I always urge people who are looking at the world not to fall for the deception on any side, right? And there are, unfortunately, so many people who recognize the evil being perpetrated by the Western globalists who somehow have fallen into the trap of believing that we need to line up with Putin and Xi Jinping and, you know, Lula da Silva down in Brazil. And that's absolute foolishness. They all represent, they're two sides of the same coin. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about the BRICS that unfortunately very few people have picked up on, each of the BRICS governments is actually the anchor in its respective regional union, right? So you look at Russia. Russia is the anchor of the Eurasian Union. Without Russia, without the Kremlin, there would be no Eurasian Union. You look at Brazil. By far the most important country in Latin America. It is the anchor of Mercosur. It's the anchor of UNASUR. It's the anchor of the regional blocs that are developing throughout Latin America. You look at South Africa. South Africa is the economic powerhouse, the political powerhouse, the military powerhouse, and the diplomatic powerhouse of the African Union. I mean, without the South African government, without the money coming through the South African government, the African Union is basically nothing, right? I mean, they've got Egypt, which has a lot of people, but not a lot of money. South Africa is the anchor of the African Union. You look at China. Of course, China is a critical component of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. It's a critical component of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And so each of these governments is actually instrumental in this push for a multipolar world order and also in the push for dividing the world up into these regional governments, exactly as Henry Kissinger strategized in his book, World Order. And when you take all that together, I mean, even the name, the BRICS, right? This is a term that came out of Goldman Sachs, Jim O'Neill, the guy who first labeled it. So to think that the BRICS are a legitimate counterpart, and I'll say one more thing on this too. If you read their declarations, right, every year they get together and they put out a declaration. I encourage people to just go read the declarations. They're openly asking for the same thing that the Western globalists are asking for: a stronger United Nations, a global monetary system, a UN counterterrorism program, a UN salvation program from climate change. They're asking for the exact same things. They're asking for the exact same New World Order that the globalists in London and Washington, D.C. and New York and Paris are asking for. So we need to understand that it's two sides of the same coin. False flag terror attacks are a pretext to accelerate the agenda that they had already. And folks, don't be deceived by Putin. He is not your friend.
So that just blew my mind what you said there. And I never and didn't click, but now it's perfect. And I focus a lot on the regional integration. And so it makes perfect sense how you outlined they're the leader in their regions. And just to add, you mentioned Jim O'Neill. And from my research, it was not just Jim O'Neill, but actually BRICS was the brainchild of World Economic Forum graduate and young global leader Rupa Purushottaman, together with Jim O'Neill of Goldman Sachs. So again, that is very suspicious. And I keep pointing out, because I think this is important, my Mexican president AMLO last year called to copy the EU in North America and integrate Canada, USA, Mexico. Bukele in El Salvador, everyone's, you know, lauding him. He, in July, and these are mainstream sources, July last year, Bukele said we should copy the EU and create a Central American Union. And you said the same for South America. Putin is doing it in Eurasia together with, well, Nazarbayev at the time in Kazakhstan was pushing that. They say it was Nazarbayev's idea in 1994. So, and I think it's a biblical perspective as well, what you mentioned earlier, this spiritual discernment, because the Bible says that, you know, all tribes, waters, nations, rich and poor, will become, you know, be subject to the system. So that would mean that there won't be any nation who won't be part of this global system. So that butts up against this, the multipolaristas, as I like to call them, that you just mentioned, who are pushing BRICS and multipolar, and yeah, it's the grass is greener on the other side. No, guys, it isn't. And you know, any other things that are important for you, the home front, USA, it looks like we're already experiencing some of the cyber polygon stuff, the ship that just destroyed the bridge. There's, you know, civil war movies coming out. There's talk of a second civil war. I've got no idea what to expect with the elections. I had on Colonel Douglas McGregor last year, who says we might not even have elections. You know, any thoughts on the home front here?
Well, you know, I want to start with the North American integration idea. That is so critical. And people think that, you know, that was Vicente Fox, that was George W. Bush. It's kind of not on the agenda anymore. Baloney. Joe Biden was down in Mexico City last year. They signed the Declaration of North America that nobody paid attention to, but absolutely critical about deepening further the integration of North America. And, you know, to all the people who really love Trump, that don't take this as an attack on you, but Donald Trump got through the USMCA, which was actually the greatest leap toward integration in North America since NAFTA. It's just a fact. You know, I like a lot of what Trump did too. You know, don't get me wrong. I hope he's reelected, but the reality is he deepened the integration of North America unlike anybody had done since the emergence of NAFTA. USMCA is basically NAFTA on steroids. It covers drastically more areas of law. It gives more power to these North American bureaucracies and tribunals that are already operating, by the way. These aren't in the future. These already exist. They're already overruling state, local courts, state, local, and even national legislatures. So this is happening now. And we've known that this was coming for a very long time. In fact, Klaus Schwab talks about it in his book on the Great Reset. There's a really interesting chapter in there that deals with this. And he talks about how people were kind of upset with globalization during the pandemic. But then he calls for an in-between solution between globalization and no globalization. And a solution, of course, to the problem of national sovereignty, national self-determination, self-government. And that alleged solution to the supposed problem is, in his words, regionalization. He says the success of the European Union shows how regionalization can be a really important step toward globalization. And then he addresses North America. He says the three states that compose North America now trade more with each other than with China or Europe. So, hey, this is great. And, you know, from the prophetic side, and I would not claim to be any kind of expert in eschatology. In fact, I approach eschatology and prophecy with just a profound sense of my own inadequacy. I never claim to truly understand or have a grasp on these things. But I did think it was really interesting that we're seeing, depending on whose counts you're using, about 10 of these regional governments emerging. And in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 12, it says, and then the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. So I don't know that these 10 regional governments that are emerging, the African Union, the European Union, the Eurasian Union, I don't know that those are that. It's a very interesting little passage. And I think really that's one of the most important things happening on the geopolitical front. And yet outside of publications like, you know, Foreign Affairs of the Council on Foreign Relations or the New American Magazine, you read almost nothing about it. And yet this is an incredible revolution in world affairs. I mean, this is the most significant development in geopolitics, maybe since you know, the 1600s, right? And the Treaty of Westphalia, where the kind of the nation state was enshrined. This is a revolution in world political arrangements, and yet it's receiving almost no publicity. We're talking about the end of national sovereignty all over the world, and it's not even a subject of political discussion. It's not an agenda that people are thinking about when they're voting. It's just incredible that they could have gotten away with this for so long. And you can tell this is orchestrated from the top, right? No sensible, serious person would believe that everybody in the world just woke up one day and decided, you know what, we don't really need our nations anymore. You know, why do we have a national government? Let's just surrender our sovereignty to this regional government. Nobody feels like a North American, right? Until a few decades of EU propaganda, nobody felt like a European, right? You're a Swede or a Frenchman or a German or a Pole. So this is very, very clearly being imposed on humanity from the top down. it is so, so significant. It's happening in the background. And I think people ought to be paying attention.
And, you know, it's kind of it made me think what you said, synthesis. The synthesis is regionalization, nationalism, one world, the middle, the synthesis, regionalization. And, you know, the Book of Daniel also talks about the statue and the dream, where you've got the empire's gold, silver, bronze, and iron. And it ends at the toes, 10 toes, you know, and then yep. Club of Rome. I've got the book right there from the 70s where they have the map from the 70s dividing the world into 10 regions. So I approach cautiously as well a prophecy, and I don't have a definitive view, but I try to merge what's happening factually with what the Bible says, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, you mentioned North American. I've got two of the three North American passports, Mexican and American. And I believe I did the last interview with Robert Pastor, the father of the North American Union.
Are you serious? You interviewed Robert Pastor?
Yeah, I met him. So he would visit our school, the Tec de Monterrey, which is the top globalist school in Mexico. And he he said in one of the talks, this was maybe a decade ago, in the theater, I kid you not, I was in the theater and I went to one of his personal talks at the school, and he said, how many Americans do we have here? How many Mexicans? How many Canadians? Because we have international students. And he says, you're not Mexicans or Americans. We're all North Americans. So his job was to come to the youth, going back to earlier in this interview, trying to indoctrinate this new youth to think that we're North Americans. And I actually assigned, as part of my reading, my class was called North American Regional Scenarios, and I assigned part of his book to my students to, you know, try to get them to understand what's really happening. And so December of 2013, I Skyped him in to the class, and that's still up on the old channel, Dissident Thinker, linked to Geopolitics and Empire. And he passed, I think, January 2014 of cancer. And so I'm pretty sure I did the last interview with the father of the North American Union. I did ask him about Bilderberg, which he shrugged, laughed off, because in the 1980 Bilderberg scanned documents people can read. They discussed forming a North American community, 1980. And then you can trace the, you know, 1989 was the bilateral Canada-USA, 1994 was NAFTA. And then you can really trace how that is going. And then, so, you know, thoughts on... for you on what we can do in these times. I always have two modes of thinking: what you're doing, speaking the truth, resisting, going to local school meetings. If someone wants to get into politics, go for it. I'm not into that. So pushing back, but also making sensible preparations, you know, in case they shut off my bank account. I've got some land where I've got a well and some fruit and, you know, goats or chickens. So thoughts on what we can do.
You and I think very much alike. You know, I do think we have an obligation to stand against evil. We have an obligation to call out and rebuke evil. In my career as a journalist, my kind of guiding motto comes out of Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11. The Apostle Paul writes to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, or some translations say expose them. And so I just feel unbelievably blessed that I get to reprove and expose these unfruitful works of darkness all day, every day, 6 days a week. I wouldn't want to be doing anything else, frankly, except maybe spending time with my family or building a business. But I love the opportunity to do this. I know not everybody is called to do this, but everybody can do something. I would recommend very strongly that people prepare themselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually for potentially very difficult times ahead. You mentioned, you know, shutting off bank accounts. Klaus Schwab has been talking about his cyber pandemic for a few years now. And these people don't mess around. When they're doing war game scenarios, we should be paying attention. I don't know whether they'll take the power grid out or the internet out, maybe a week, maybe two, maybe longer. I don't know. But, you know, it'd be wise to have some precautions in place. You know, and I do think it's important not to get too disillusioned, because I think a lot of people, when they start learning how the world really works, they almost get into a panic. They don't know what to do. You know, the thought of suicide even sometimes crosses people's mind. What do we do? The whole world's run by evil megalomaniacs. You mentioned the statue that's described in the Book of Daniel. My favorite part of that prophecy, and for background for the folks who aren't familiar with this story, so King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. King Nebuchadnezzar has God's people captive there. They had gone into idolatry, and so God allows King Nebuchadnezzar to take them captive in Babylon. And while there, the king has this wild dream of this statue, and he doesn't know what it means. And so only Daniel, this Hebrew guy, knows what it means. God reveals to him the significance of the prophecy, what it was, first of all, what it means. And it is a prophecy of what's going to happen from now until the end. And the really, really great thing about this is that there is a rock, this prophecy says, that is not carved by human hands, that comes and smashes this statue and scatters it to the wind and then grows and takes over the whole world. And that is, of course, God's kingdom. So by the time this is all said and done, all the evil empires, all the evil doers are going to be stopped. And Christ is going to rule and reign. And so there is a lot to look forward to. It may be bumpy between here and there, but I do believe that the Bible is the word of God. And I do believe the promises that these evildoers are not going to be allowed to make it to the finish line. And I'm encouraged by that. And I encourage other people, if you don't have a good relationship with God, if you don't know God personally, now would be a really, really good time to start thinking about that seriously, especially if you have family, especially if you have children. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't know how many more breaths God is going to allow us to take. And so we should think of eternity as well. But yeah, I mean, in the meantime, while we're here, I do think it's good for people to get involved in the political realm. I don't know that we're going to be able to, you know, fix things, so to speak, with elections. I'd love it if we could. I don't know whether that's a realistic prospect, but having a good relationship with your sheriff, having a good relationship with your governor, having a good state legislator representing your district, having a good state senator, you know, and I'll give one example of this. I know we're running up on the clock, but here in Florida during the COVID outrage, I'm not even going to call it a pandemic, this assault on humanity and decency and morality and liberty. While the rest of the world was living under basically total tyranny, here in my neck of the woods, we were totally free. I mean, we just completely opted out of this whole stupid thing. We didn't have any mask mandates. We didn't have any of that stuff. And why was that? It certainly wasn't because, you know, Joe Biden wasn't the president here in this county. I mean, he's the president of the whole United States. It was because our city leaders and our county leaders and our state leaders said, look, we're not going to be doing that. We're not going to participate. We're not going to allow you to enforce. And they actually actively resisted. Like when Joe Biden came out with this crazy vaccine mandate that everybody had to take the shot or be fired from their job, our governor called our legislature into special session and said, look, we're going to pass a law that if you fire somebody for not taking the death jab, then you're going to pay a fine that is 10 times bigger than the fine that the federal government's going to give you. Well, what happened? Not a lot of people in Florida got fired for refusing to take the jab. So I do think that there are some really, really important and good things that can be accomplished through political action. But absolutely, if you are not ready to survive difficult economic times, if you're not ready to survive even the possibility of losing your power and your communications for a time, you ought to be thinking about those things. What are the most important things? Well, water, food, shelter, things like that. So keep those things in mind and be in prayer, because these are some really, really, really exciting times.
Well, no black pills here. We got the white pill, as I like to joke, the Gandalf. Jesus, right? I've been criticized for being cyanide pilled, as I like to sometimes say, like as, like illegal. That's legal man's term of Jones Plantation. I've chatted with him, but ultimately, I think for some of us, our white pill is you know, metaphysical, spiritual Jesus. And you're all over the place. You are relentless. I see you on Steve Bannon's War Room, Greg Hunter's program, TNT Radio, all over the place, going to conferences, New American, Liberty Sentinel. Tell us, you know, what are your projects, books, best websites that we need to know about?
Well, thank you again for the opportunity. So my personal website is libertysentinel.org. We send out a newsletter twice a week. We do a daily TV show through there called The Sentinel Report. It goes out through Lindell TV, along with Emerald Robinson and Lou Dobbs, a whole bunch of other great people. So they can watch that on my website or any of the networks that carry it. I do a weekly nationally syndicated radio show for the New American called Behind the Deep State. People can check that out either on AMFM radio or it's on the newamerican.com, where I serve as senior editor. I do encourage people to get signed up for the magazine. Especially if you live in the United States, you know, you can get it shipped right to your door twice a month. Here's our latest issue. We did an interview with Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's always a firebrand, always has interesting stuff to say. I do lead as a volunteer the Public School Exit Ministry. We're working to get children out of government schools. You can find us at publicschoolexit.com. We will do anything we can to help your family or your church liberate the children from government indoctrination camps. And then here's my my latest. It's Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government Schools' War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It. I believe this is it's actually what we started with, right? The education issue. I believe it's the critical issue of our time, and the book's available anywhere decent books are sold. Unfortunately, including Amazon is the easiest place to get it, but my website also carries it, and I'll be happy to ship it to people. And thanks again for having me on the program. It's what a pleasure to talk with someone who's so well-informed. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you're doing awesome work. Keep it up. And if I don't see you on this side of eternity, I'll see you on the other side. Thanks for being on Geopolitics and Empire.
Amen. Thank you, brother.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com. And I encourage you to sign up for the free email list that goes out with each podcast and every weekend with a collection of news headlines. The newsletter and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's nearly impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently takes down our videos with strikes. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit and Twitter take down posts. And after the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our Pro account. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms: Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the podcast ecosystem: SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Finally, Geopolitics and Empire is in dire need of funding to continue. You can leave a donation, purchase a consultation with the host, or become a member to receive additional benefits. We also produce a weekly broadcast called Dissident Thinker for members and Rockfin subscribers only. We will continue to fight the good fight, come hell or high water. Thank you for listening.